Hello, this is Claire Levy. Coming up in this edition of the DRWF podcast, Living with Diabetes, we have the latest instalment of our special series of programmes looking specifically at women's health. In this episode, I've been talking to Vanessa Haydock, a body trainer and coach living with type 1 diabetes.
I just remember it taking about three nurses to give me my first insulin injection because I was not having any of it. I was so scared. And I'd try and really understand what was going on with my levels. I got into health and fitness. I just, you know, improved my overall habits and behaviours around my diabetes. The first step to any behaviour change is that acceptance. And acceptance is key when it comes to any condition, especially type 1 diabetes. And it's that acceptance that, okay, it's with me for life, but it's not going to stop me and it's not going to defeat me. You know, you look at the stats and it's, you know, we're 50% more likely to suffer from some form of mental health condition, which is it any wonder with the pressure that we're under? Diabetes burnout is a thing and it's not really something that's spoken about enough. And I always say, even to clients, you know, even I go through periods of burnout. I think the main thing is that when it comes to diabetes, everyone's journey with diabetes is different, and there's no such thing as perfection when it comes to diabetes.
Hear the full interview coming up next.
Views, information, or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent the opinions, standards, or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them. The aim of podcasts is to educate and inform, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. Neither DRWF nor any of its employees or owners shall be held liable or responsible for the accuracy or completeness, for any errors or omissions in podcasts, or for any damage you may suffer as a result of failing to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who is familiar with your situation.
So, Vanessa Haydock has been living for 25 years with type 1 diabetes. You're based in Chorley in Lancashire. And you're a behaviour analyst and a body trainer and a habit changer. So, hello, Vanessa.
Thank you very much for having me. Nice to meet you.
Could you just introduce yourself, tell us what you do?
Yep. So my name is Vanessa. I also go by the name of the Diabetic Health Coach. I am a coach and behaviour analyst, and I live with type 1 diabetes. And I've gone through all of the roller coaster of emotions that can come with diabetes. I've experienced so many ups and downs, and I'm finally at a place now where everything's all going okay, as far as I know. I help people who also have diabetes like myself to meet their health and fitness goals, mindset related goals, and just helping people to what I like to call dominate the diabetes, because it's not easy. And I think sometimes we just need that little bit of extra support along the way.
So what was your type 1 diagnosis like?
So my diagnosis, I was around the age of 3 years old. And it's funny because I actually remember it really, really well, all those years ago. And I remember being in the doctor's surgery and them telling my mum and dad, and then I had to go to hospital, and then I remember injecting into an orange. And, you know, back in the day, that's what it was like, because you had to use syringes and mixed insulin and glucose monitors. It's crazy looking back now, but obviously I had to start off by pricking my finger 4 times a day. And I just remember it taking about 3 nurses to give me my first insulin injection because I was not having any of it. I was so scared. Growing up with diabetes, my mum and dad, I always kind of like referred to them as my pancreas because they did everything for me. They were incredible. And, you know, back in the 90s, we're talking like there was no CGMs, there was no smart pens. I don't think there were pumps back then either. The internet as well wasn't as easily accessible, so they had to, you know, read books and improve the knowledge around diabetes and just try and help me as much as they could, and they did an amazing job.
Did your family have any experience of anybody living with type 1?
I had two great aunties who were both twins. So my dad's aunties who both had type 1 diabetes, but other than that, nobody in my family's got diabetes, not even type 2 diabetes. So there's no, I'm the only one.
So you said they were a fantastic support.
Yeah.
Looking back, and have you spoken to them now you're an adult to say what was it like having a little girl diagnosed?
Yeah, I mean, I speak to my mum about it quite a lot because my mum was amazing. She used to weigh absolutely everything to a T. And, you know, she'd be coming in. I remember she used to come into school on the breaks to give me snacks and my insulin, because we had to have insulin at a set amount of time back then, and I had to have snacks at a set amount of time during a set time. And she used to come in on lunch breaks, and she used to come with me on all my school trips. And yeah, it was hard, but she did it because she said, you know, I knew what I needed to do, and I just did it. And yeah.
And how did your peers treat you then? Having your mum come on school trips and things, did it make a difference, or did you like that?
Yeah, I mean, I used to quite like it, to be honest, because my mum came everywhere with me as a little girl. You do quite like it. But yeah, no, it was good. I mean, I think kids back then, again, the internet wasn't readily available, so they knew that something was up with me because I was off for quite a while from school. But yeah, they didn't really question much. I don't remember ever having any issues diabetes wise with, you know, peers asking questions or anything like that back then. It was more when I was at high school, I think, when.
So what happened as you grew up and you took more control over your own diabetes?
I wish I did, but it kind of went the opposite. So obviously, growing up as a little girl with diabetes in primary school, my mum and dad they were my pancreas. They helped me with a lot of things. But then obviously you go to high school and then you're having to completely take the reins with everything. And that was when I just, you know, went through a huge phase of being in denial. You know, I wasn't checking my glucose levels. I knew I had diabetes, but I didn't really know what diabetes was, which sounds really bad for me to say. But I knew I had to inject insulin. I knew that I had to treat my hypos if my blood sugar dropped. But my knowledge around it was just not the best. I hated going to my appointments. I used to, you know, make up numbers in that little notebook that you used to get to give to your endocrinologist. And yeah, it just, I just wanted to be like my friends, and I just did not want to have it. So I really struggled as a teenager growing up, and I didn't know anyone either. There was no social media back then. So, you know, we're going back to the early 2000s. There was nothing like Instagram or Facebook like there is now.
So that denial, what changed your mind? Was there any interventions, or did you learn more? What made a difference?
So for me, it was the shock tactic, because when I was 18, I got diagnosed with retinopathy and maculopathy. So I got a letter, and I think everyone can relate to this one. They get the retinopathy and maculopathy letter. It's in capital letters. And I read it and I just burst out crying to my partner. And I said, oh my goodness, I said, I don't want to lose my sight. And it just made me literally do a 360 overnight, where I started to make little changes. I started to really try and take control over my diabetes. And I started off, because obviously there wasn't CGMs back then either, I started to check my glucose levels on my meter every single hour. I used to write them down in my own little like notebook. I'd highlight which ones were high, which ones were low in different colours. And I'd try and really understand what was going on with my levels. I got into health and fitness. I just, you know, improved my overall habits and behaviours around my diabetes. And I started to do a lot of volunteering for diabetes charities as well back then, just to get into that kind of, you know, area of getting to know the people with diabetes too. I think, like, when it comes to anyone who's in denial, is firstly, the first step to any behaviour change is that acceptance. And acceptance is key when it comes to any condition, especially type 1 diabetes. And it's that acceptance that, okay, it's with me for life, but it's not going to stop me. and it's not going to defeat me, because I always say when it comes to type 1 diabetes, we are the steering wheel behind our car, which is our diabetes. And everyone's car's different. Some of us drive manual, automatic and electric flying cars, but we still have to turn that wheel. So as long as we get to learn our body and learn our own diabetes and surround ourselves with people who are going through the same thing, it gets easier. So yeah, I think the first step is, again, that acceptance, and then just making small changes. Because when it comes to behaviour change, if we go from 0 to 100, we're not going to maintain that, and we're not going to be able to sustain that. Whereas if we go from 0 to 10, and then 10 to 20, 20 to 30, etc., it's just making those small little changes.
Do you think your diabetes stopped you doing anything?
No. Never. No, I don't. It's not. And that's one thing that drives me, is I will not let it stop me doing anything.
So did you learn more? Did you improve your education? You said you didn't know what diabetes was when you were little.
Yeah, I went on all the courses. I did my own research. I bought books. I was a uni student back then as well. So obviously you're already into reading a lot of research and just, yeah, trying to understand my body a little bit more.
Did it affect your student years that you couldn't
do things? Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it affected my student years. I still, I enjoyed uni. I enjoyed going out with friends, etc. I was just a lot more careful. Don't get me wrong, there was nights where, my blood sugars ran high, and, I think we all go through those periods of time, especially at that age. And I just think in general, we can't be 100% all the time. So yeah, and I mean, I didn't let it stop me when I was younger.
But it isn't a straight line, is it? You can't sort of say, well, I was there and now I'm here and look how perfect I am.
Yeah, exactly.
And there are parts of your life that will affect
your
diabetes and your age and what's going on hormonally. How do you work with all that?
Absolutely. Well, I was never really taught much growing up around how the menstrual cycle, for example, can impact glucose levels. I was never really taught that much about that. And then again, doing my own research, realised that, wow, actually there's a lot that, I don't know. Obviously hormonal changes growing up, stress is another big one. So when I was going through exams, glucose levels were running high, and trying to understand that side of things too, because as we all know, stress, it's like that vicious circle. You feel stressed, your glucose levels go high, but then you're more stressed because they're high. There's a lot for us to know. And again, when it comes down to education, this is why within my coaching now as well, I do put quite a big emphasis on the education side and trying to help people to understand things a little bit more and provide as much knowledge as I can.
So tell us about the diabetic health coach. What is it? Yeah. How does it work?
So when I was at uni, I was training to become a behaviour analyst, which I am. I am now a certified behaviour analyst. So my background's in psychology and behaviour change. And when I was growing up, I was kind of a bit like, why is there nothing like this for people with diabetes? Obviously behaviour change, it's human behaviour, child behaviour. Why do we behave the way we do? And it's all about habits and how do you improve habits, etc. And I'm thinking, well, for us with diabetes, we have to do all of these things overnight, make those changes overnight. We can know what to do, but it doesn't actually mean that we do it. So how come there's nothing like this for us? So with going into that industry, and then obviously I was into health and fitness myself, and I had coaches myself back then, and I used to think, oh gosh, it would make such a big difference if they also had diabetes, because they didn't understand it. They just thought that I just needed to avoid sugar. So that's when I started the diabetic health coach. Sorry, so I started to coach people online to help to improve their health, fitness, help them to work towards their goals, whatever that was. I then also became a face-to-face personal trainer, so I still do that as well. Within my coaching service, I am one-to-one personal trainer, and then also online, and then it just grew from there. I kind of just started to, every single one of my clients has got type 1 diabetes, and people will come to me with specific health and fitness goals, mindset goals, goals around just improving their overall relationship with the diabetes. And then we would work towards those goals, and I'd help them and support them along the way. So, yeah.
And what about mental health? Yeah. How has it affected your mental health, your client's mental health, and how has your tech, your CGMs made a difference to that?
So, mental health and type 1 diabetes, this is something that's never really spoken about. And I always remember that, I always remember on my doctor's notes, on my endocrinologist's notes on this computer screen, there was a section that was not ticked off saying, has she had a mental health screening, which was part of the diabetes, like what's the HbA1c, what's the cholesterol, etc. And then there was, and it made me think back then, I thought, that's funny, I've never actually been asked about my mental health with diabetes, even though it's obviously something that's important on the computer. And then I looked into it, and then obviously, you know, you look at the stats and it's, you know, we're 50% more likely to suffer from some form of mental health condition, which is it any wonder with the pressure that we're under? Personally, for myself, I'm quite open and honest. My health anxiety is through the roof, and it always has been. I think ever since I was younger, obviously, diabetes, you always think, is that my diabetes? Is this because I was really bad as a teenager? Is this a complication? What's this symptom? What is it? Is it my diabetes or is it something else? So I do find that I get a little bit more anxious when it comes to health. Maybe that's what drives me to try and be as healthy as I can, which I know is never going to be, you know, I'm never going to be 100%. And I don't think anyone is really. It's one of those where, yeah, all we can do is just try our best. But again, mental health, a lot of my clients may suffer from, you know, depression or anxiety or, you know, just overwhelm in general, because diabetes burnout is a thing and it's not really something that's spoken about enough. And I always say, even to clients, you know, even I go through periods of burnout, and even though I might seem like I'm, you know, on it all the time, nobody's 100% all the time. Nobody's 90% all the time. It is literally a daily battle. And is it any wonder that sometimes it can be quite overwhelming?
So now, you know, everybody's got their phone and using social media. So do you think that's impacted awareness in the general population and that understanding of diabetes, and are there pros and cons?
I mean, social media, I think, has been an absolute godsend for the diabetes community, because when I was younger, there was nothing like that. And I didn't know anyone with diabetes until I met the first person with diabetes when I was 18. Before then, didn't know anyone, didn't have anyone to talk to about it. And it definitely helps people to come together and to be able to, you know, share experiences with one another, peer support. I always say to clients, you know, insulin's our medication physically, but peer support's medication for the mind. And I think that's so true, because, you know, with anything, human behaviour in general, being able to speak to others, there's a huge positive impact on our behaviour and our mental health as well, when it comes to being able to share experiences with others. So, yeah, I think that social media has definitely had a positive impact. There are cons. I mean, again, I always say social media is, it always likes to show the sunshines and rainbows of everything, and sometimes you don't see the bad days, you don't see the really high glucose levels that everyone experiences at some point. We only really see the flat lines, which absolutely you want to be able to share that, you want to share your wins, but I think it's very easy then for people to compare and think, oh gosh, why am I not like that? But everyone's journey with diabetes is so different as well.
But you have got a pretty big following on social media. Has the type 1 diabetes community embraced you and your lived experience, or what about professionals? Have they embraced it? Do they listen to you?
I think so. I've had a few medics contact me. I know a few medics who are quite well known in the diabetes space as well. Yeah, I mean, again, like it's one of those where I've also had some clients be referred to me from medics who followed me on social media as that kind of like support, which is really good. And yeah, so I obviously I'm a Freestyle Libre ambassador as well. So again, showing to people around, you know, that when it comes to CGMs, not to be ashamed to show off diabetes tech. I think that's really important, especially for the younger community too, because I do speak to a lot of people who are quite, you know, nervous to show diabetes tech and a little bit, not ashamed, but, you know, they don't want other people to know that they've got diabetes. So I think, social media is brilliant for that as well, because it gives people the confidence to be able to show off the diabetes to others, to show that, you know, this is what I deal with every single day, and I'm proud to say that, you know, I make it through each day managing my diabetes the best that I can.
So you wear some tech. How has your CGM made a difference to your day-to-day life?
So for me, my CGM, my freestyle Libre sensor, has changed my life. I look back and I think, where would I be right now if I didn't have that piece of technology? And I'll always remember that when I very first started using it, which was like over 10 years ago now, and I remember putting it on for the first time, and I actually cried to my dad, because I thought, I've never been able to actually see my levels in front of me. I've only ever gone off a couple of numbers a day. And to actually see that visual graph there in front of me, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my gosh. And again, it works as such an incredible prompt and piece of, you know, it just allows us to understand, you know, the direction that our glucose levels are going in. We get prompts from, you know, the alarms, and yeah, it's been an absolute game changer for my diabetes management, absolutely. I think if I had one when I was younger, I do think my relationship with my diabetes would have been completely different.
So do you talk to younger people who've got tech sort of straight away, and they'd have a different mindset, do you think?
Yeah, I think I speak to so many different people, and I think for a lot of younger people now with diabetes tech, it's actually quite a cool thing to have, you know, to show the diabetes tech, which is brilliant, because I know that back a couple of years ago, it was a little bit more kind of, no one really knew what they were, and now so many more people, you know, are a lot more confident to show off the diabetes tech. And even, you know, people without diabetes are wearing them at home. But yeah, yeah.
Have you had any negative comments on social media, say, criticisms or...
What about diabetes tech in general? Not really, no. I mean, there's the odd person that you might get saying, well, I don't want to use any diabetes tech, I'm fine with my, you know, my meter, and that's absolutely fine, because, you know, and it's not one size fits all when it comes to diabetes. You know, some use pumps, some use pens. I still use pens, and, you know, some probably still use syringes, I don't know, but, you know, again, it's always kind of like looking at what works for us. And I think what's really important is to always remember that, you know, there's 9 million people in the world with type 1 diabetes, and there's 9 million ways to manage it. I think the main thing is that when it comes to diabetes, everyone's journey with diabetes is different, and there's no such thing as perfection when it comes to diabetes. And I think the worst mistake that I made when I was younger was comparing myself to others. When, as I said previously, everyone's diabetes is different. Not every day is going to be the same, but as long as we can come out of the day and think, right, have I tried my best? If the answer is yes, that's all we can do. And not putting pressure on ourselves to, you know, always be 100% on it all the time. You know, there's days where I just think, oh, do you know what, diabetes? Just take a back seat for today, because I've just not got the brain energy for you today. We're only human at the end of the day. And again, all we can do is just try our best.
Do you have anybody monitoring with you, or do you share any of your readings? Does anybody, you know, that support, is anybody there that could say, well, I know you're having a bad day, but...
Yeah, so my other half has Link Up. So he does look at my readings, which is good. I did think to share them with my mum and dad, but my mum and dad, they'd just be like, check your blood, have something to eat. They'd be messaging me all the time. So yeah, just my other half at the minute.
Yeah, yeah. That's lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast. and our special series looking at some of the challenges facing women living with diabetes. You can find helpful guidance on all aspects of diabetes, together with details on how to support the charity, fundraising events, news and information on our website at drwf.org.uk. Thanks to all our guests who have helped us explore diabetes and women's health, and to you for joining us. Coming up next time, a panel of our previous guests with type 1, Dawn Adams, Greta Earls and Vanessa Haydock, to explore common issues and solutions.
Yeah, I mean, like, when it comes down to type 1 diabetes and, you know, type 2 diabetes as well, no matter what diabetes it is, obviously the hormonal fluctuations, the menstrual cycle, perimenopause, menopause, unfortunately all of those things can have such a significant impact.
Fear of having UTIs, because antibiotics also impact your glucose levels. And it's a horrible vicious cycle that you cannot seem to get out of.
If you're then like very insulin resistant and you just program your pump to inject more, and then a day later suddenly you're in constant hypos because your menstrual, your cycle has changed and you don't know why.
This podcast has been supported by Abbott. Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2025. Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.